Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
It's time now for the Friday Gathering, and this week I'm joined by Christopher O'Sullivan, Fianna Fáil TD for Cork South West, Roisin Shortall, Social Democrats TD for Dublin North West, Aisling Maloney is here, political correspondent with the Irish Daily Mail, and Harry McGee is Irish Times political correspondent. You're all welcome. Thank you for being here. There's an interesting one that is on the front of the Irish Times today about property tax in Dublin. Looks set to increase at the insistence of the Labour Party representatives on Dublin City Council. So it seems from the report that it's part of a deal they've cut with councillors from the coalition parties, Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil and the Greens as well. Harry, you might just explain the story to us, first of all.
Yeah, so after the local elections, there's been horse trading, essentially, to see who's going to be in control of Dublin City Council for the next 5 years. And initially, there was efforts to kind of form a left-of-centre coalition comprising the Social Democrats, the Labour Party, Sinn Féin. And between them, they had almost enough seats to command a majority. I think they were just one seat short of a majority. So they'd need to get to recruit the support of somebody from a very small party or an independent. But I think the talks foundered over the issue of local property tax. So since local property tax has come in its current form, every local authority in the country has been given flexibility in relation to how much can be opposed.
Yeah.
There's a kind of a 15% latitude or wiggle room. So Dublin City Council, since the start, has never chosen to charge anything more than the threshold rate, the lowest possible rate. They could increase it by 15%.
And probably on the logic that houses in Dublin are worth more than they are in other parts of the country, so maybe there was a feeling that people were paying enough.
Yeah, but also that if people pay a little bit more in property tax, they get more services from the city.
That's the theory, yeah.
So it provides better services, cleaner streets, better public transport, better amenities and what have you. And this has always been a kernel policy for parties that are left of centre. Property tax is a wealth tax. It expands the tax base. It's something that allows those who have more to pay more.
Mm-hmm.
So parties like Roisin's, the Social Democrats, like the Labour Party and the Green Party have been very much in favour of it. But the other party in that potential alliance, Sinn Féin, has opposed property tax since it was first mooted back in 2012, 2013, and wasn't amenable to be budged on the issue.
So that's how this gang didn't work.
That's how it dissipated. Yeah.
Okay. So then the parties who were
The Labour Party went looking for a new dance partner,
right,
essentially. And they ended up doing a tango, first of all, with Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil. And now we seem to have an alliance of Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, the Greens and the Labour Party. Labour Party have four seats on the City Council. They also are tantalisingly one seat close of a majority as well. So they will probably have to recruit somebody else. But
parties all agree that property tax should be increased in Dublin.
It's like St. Francis of Assisi, Lord, make me chase, but not quite yet.
Right.
They're going to wait until after the general election is over. Because any party that goes and says we're going to increase property tax this year is not going to be very not going to receive a very warm welcome at the door.
Does that include your own, Roisin? Are you not willing to say that before a general election, or is it the others?
Yeah, and you know, the we have been in favour of that all along.
But none of
really,
the others
because
will.
Because we need decent
will
services
step up
in the city. The other parties previously, the Labour Party and the Greens, would have been in agreement with that. But it seems now they're happy to do a deal with Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. Mm-hmm. And Claire, we were in a unique situation where for the first time ever, it was possible to put together a majority grouping without either Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael. Like, people in Dublin City voted in a majority for parties of the left. So this was a unique opportunity, and we know the Labour Party has been talking a lot about mergers and alliances and so on.
With yourselves.
And unfortunately, you know, they walked away from a potential left of centre agreement, which would have been good for the city. And that agreement, our putative agreement, contained a list of measures that everybody was signing up to, including new ways of raising funding for the city. You know, the backdrop to all of this is that local government is starved of funding.
Yeah.
We have a very centralised country and governance in the country. And rather than taking that opportunity, looking for doing things like introducing a tourist tax, for example, which most capital cities in Europe have, we could have worked towards that. We could have looked at other ways of raising resources for the city. And as I say, it was a unique opportunity to do something really different and to do something progressive.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, the Labour Party and the Green Party walked away from that.
Well, what about Christopher's party?
I'm not expecting anything of Fianna Fáil, to be honest with you. But there was an opportunity to put together a progressive alliance. And it's really regrettable, I think, that Labour and the Greens walked away from that opportunity.
Resolutely opposed to increasing the property tax. And that was a stumbling block, was it not?
Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are resolutely opposed, always. It remains to be seen what this supposed agreement now is going to deliver. And as you said yourself, Harry, you know, they're not signing up to increasing the property tax this year. So will they do it next year? Who knows?
Mm-hmm. Christopher, like Roisin says, she wouldn't expect anything else from Fianna Fáil. But actually, it's a very mature thing to do, to say, look, let's fund our local authorities properly by doing this. Why wouldn't you take that option? Because it was an issue. Certainly, I heard it over the course of the local election campaign. People were saying, what am I voting for here? What can my councillor do? Because I don't see any money in the area to fix the potholes and do the things that need doing.
You have to ask the question, first of all, is it a money issue? Is it a financial issue? Or is it how effectively and efficiently Dublin City Council work? I think actually, in terms of the failings of Dublin City Council, which, you know, I've been here for the last 4 years, and there are quite a lot in terms of the condition of the streets and the amenities available for families. I think it's as much down to how Dublin City Council is run, how effectively it's run by the executive, as well as funding. So I think that's partially been the basis for the resistance of Fianna Fáil, and I can only speak on behalf of Fianna Fáil, in terms of increasing property tax, because obviously cost of living is an issue. You're imposing an extra burden, financial burden, on the residents of Dublin City. So it's not something that you take lightly. So you have to get guarantees and you have to get assurances in terms of where that's going to go. My understanding is that there'll be in the region of 14.5 million at least raised in terms of the increase in local property tax in years 2, 3, 4 and 5. And that's going to be ring-fenced for the things that I just spoke about.
Cleaning
streets, amenities like playgrounds, and also maintenance. In terms of this year, who's to say it won't be done, Roisin? It's a free vote, is from what I can understand.
That's disingenuous.
I think what's disingenuous is, I'll say this about the Labour Party. They're willing to talk, they're willing to give concessions, they're willing to enter into agreements in order to get things done. With the Social Democrats last year, a red line was the increase in the local property tax. There was a motion put down by Social Democrats to increase the local property tax. Yet, and I think it comes down to populism, and I have great time for yourself, Roisin. You're an experienced politician, and Catherine, but I think under the new Sock Dems, I think there's verging towards populism, and you're willing to get into bed with Sinn Féin, who will not raise local property tax, and that's a red line for them. And I think it's verging on populism instead of actually getting things done.
Christopher, you're rewriting history there.
Labour, in fairness, came from the Social Democrats. And they've shown this in the Dáil as well.
And the Greens last year.
But Labour, in fairness, in order to get things that are important to them underlined, they're willing to make concessions. And politics is all about concessions. And I think in terms of the Sock Dems,
Fianna Fáil aren't willing to vote it in this year. Whereas the other council parties are being very clear about what their lines are on it, and Labour, Social Democrats and the Greens are saying that they'll increase it, regardless of the palatability of the election year or not. And I suppose I'm reading the press release from the Green Party that today, as they're announcing this power pact that they've all agreed to, saying that Dublin City is filthy. So it's filthy now. Is it going to, is it not filthy now to change it now, or well, is it going to be, is it filthy in 2 years? We'll do it.
This is why you seek assurances, and as I said, it has been ring fenced for that tidying streets, cleaning streets, which I think all residents of Dublin.
I have a statement here from the Labour Group leader on Dublin City Council, Councillor Dara Moriarty, who says the Labour Group is entering an agreement on Dublin City Council with Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil, and the Green Party, which we know, with the support of some independents, following a significant breakthrough on LPT, increasing funding for vital local services. And they remind us that since the introduction of the property tax, successive councils have insisted on reducing the payable rate by 15% each year, which Labour says gifts away tax cuts to wealthy property owners. This additional revenue will now instead be ring-fenced and pumped back into Dublin to provide cleaner streets, a new playground fund, and at Labour's request, additional resources to upgrade the city's social housing stock. So that's their position on it. Can I just broaden this out away from Dublin, away from the local property tax? What does it say, Aisling, for the prospect of a left-leaning coalition on a national level now as we look towards a general election?
Well, it sounds like the kind of field is open, that everyone's talking to each other, everyone's dancing with each other at the Cayley. And I suppose when the numbers get a little bit more, when the playing field is a little bit more levelled, when you don't have huge behemoths of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael having the power that they once did on many local councils, that you do have this opening up where parties like the Social Democrats that made huge gains and are the second largest party in Dublin City Council, for example, can be a more of a force and more of a voice and more of a force to be reckoned with, and to do a deal like that. So the idea that I suppose it's interesting to see that pact we talked about at the start, the example of the Social Democrats, Labour and Sinn Féin, and that there was that issue that Sinn Féin wouldn't concede on the local property tax, but as you said, that there were other fundraising issues that could be compromised on. It's interesting because we're kind of talking about, and definitely in political circles, the next government, just to kind of bring it into the national sphere, the next government being either Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael and others. But actually, you know, if we do see enough of a growth of the Social Democrats, which we saw in the local elections, we saw Labour gaining in the European elections, and obviously Green Party did not, but if we see other parties of the left like Sinn Féin do as well as they did in 2020, maybe a rainbow or a progressive alliance of the left could be more likely. However, the numbers at the moment in the current Dáil wouldn't stack up in that way, and there's too many kind of fragmented people of the left as well, so that would all need to be resolved before any of that actually comes to fruition. I think.
I mean, Barry Lenihan during the election campaign, he exhausted the thesaurus around the phrase, there isn't the width of a cigarette paper between them. So I did an exercise where I looked at 6 or 7 local councils. Now, it's not comprehensive, but I looked at the transfer patterns for 6 or 7 local councils, and there was very heavy transfers between the Labour Party, the Social Democrats and the Green Party in all instances, with the Social Democrats being the main beneficiary. They were taking votes from everybody. And then we also saw a kind of phenomenon where Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil were transferring very heavily towards each other. And then Sinn Féin, almost like a sui generis, as they say in legal terms, a kind of a category of its own, where they kind of stayed in-house in terms of their transfers in the main. So the voters certainly think that there is a block there, what Roisin describes as the progressive left, and they do not mind at all transferring their preferences from one to the other.
Well, doesn't that make it all the more difficult to understand the Labour Party thinking in this? There was an opportunity to do something progressive, and they walked away from
it.
It wasn't only in Dublin City. The exact same thing is happening. Labour is going
into a
coalition.
I'd be happy talking about Labour if I had Labour here, and I don't have them here to defend themselves.
But the same thing is happening in Fingal County Council.
Listen, are you worried about this, Christopher, that we see this, that we could see this replicated in a general election, the voting patterns that Harry has described to us?
No, I'll make a prediction in terms of what a future government might look like. I think there's a real good chance that you could have a future government made up of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael being the core parties within that government. That's just based on the recent elections in the local elections, where Fianna Fáil are the largest party
with
in local
who?
Government, Fine Gael are the second largest party. We'll talk to everyone. We'll talk to the Social Democrats. Absolutely, we've no problem with that. We'll talk to Labour. We'll talk to Independents. My problem with a party like the Social Democrats is that I'd struggle to see any stability in that, because I feel genuinely that the first difficult decision that you have to make, and you have to make difficult decisions in government, as Roisin well knows, that the first difficult decisions that they'll be gone. So that would be my one concern, is the stability and a government going full term with someone like the Social Democrats. But look, listen, we'll talk to everybody.
But what's she saying? They're unpredictable.
I think, as I said earlier, they're verging
on populism. You know what they are and what they stand for.
We've seen, and if I could just kind of...
Christopher seems to have a bit of a hang-up about us.
In my experience,
it's because we did so well in the local elections.
Labour, I think, kind of beat you pretty comprehensively. But I know Labour would have beat you comprehensively in the local elections and in Europe
Sorry,
as well.
Not in terms of increasing
They do have an MEP, though.
I'm not here
to champion Labour.
What is unpredictable about the Social Democrats? What is the problem?
My experience in the Dáil over the last 4 years is that they do tend to take a pretty populist stance, and their mantra seems to be, we live in a failed country, we live in a terrible country, none of our services
are working. That's a complete misrepresentation of the reflection
that we've seen in the local elections in particular is that actually people aren't as disgusted with how the country's been run at the moment. Economically,
the Social Democrats are saying, because they did quite well.
They improved. I don't think they did as well as some polls were putting them at 10-11% at some point. I think it was a regional 3.6%.
Almost doubled our council seats. Now, I don't know, Christopher, I don't know if you were sent in here with lines to put out about the party.
No, I can make up my own mind.
They're completely untrue. You know, and the Social Democrats from the very start have set out to be constructive and to be a solution-focused party.
And
we come up with solutions
to
problems.
I'm seeing identification of problems, but
well,
not
maybe
solutions.
You should look a bit closer.
Not solutions, there, whereas in fairness to Labour...
Another point I'd make, though, Claire, is that, you know, Harry was talking about, you know, cigarette paper and the difference. What I'm amazed at is that I think you could truly say that there isn't a cigarette paper in the difference between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael at this stage. And they've essentially been in government for the last 11 or 12 years. And why is that question not being raised about them merging? Because surely that's the logical thing at this stage in the country's development.
People could say the same about Social Democrats and Labour, couldn't they?
These are the two... You know, big parties. Why is there a time?
But I suppose the point is, Harry, people are saying that and asking that very openly about the Soc Dems and Labour. But you know, we don't even go there. People have acknowledged that there won't even be an open voting pact between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael.
No matter how parties brand themselves or present themselves, I mean, the voters have an innate understanding of what each of the parties represents, and I think that the transfer patterns explain that. I mean, 10 years ago, it would have been anathema for somebody from Fianna Fáil, who was kind of a De Valera steeped Civil War Fianna Fáiler, to transfer. If they'd have to have the pencil prized into their hand to do it. Yeah. But nowadays that's all changed. So I mean, it's unimportant as to Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael coming together. They all have they want to keep their unique identities, and it all comes down to the deals that are done and the agreements that are done after the election has taken place. And there are differences between the parties. And there are differences between the Social Democrats and the Labour Party.
Social Democrats, yeah. Mm.
Yeah, but each party, in my estimation, each party should be allowed to present itself according to its own lines.
A new party, a fresh party.
All right, Christopher, why aren't people having that conversation? Because you yourself, one of the first things you said about the upcoming general election, whenever it might be, is that you'll have Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael back in. That's your preference.
I often get predictions.
So just come together and be done with it and be the strong force that you think you can.
It's a very fair question for Roisin to ask, and it's a very fair point to make in terms of, because I think the gaps, if there was a gulf there before between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, there's not a gulf there anymore. We're not the same party. Obviously, we're not the same party.
Joined at the hip.
And we will canvass and we will enter the next election on certainly different platforms and different manifestos. But yeah, the gap has closed. We've shown that we're able to work together. There's certainly a maturity there. It still is difficult for some grassroots Fianna Fáil supporters, for example, to support, for example, a Fine Gael Taoiseach. But that is something that we've proven that we're able to get over. We're able to get over ourselves and move on. And again, you know, Harry put the question to Roisin. I think I'd imagine the same thing should happen with Labour and the Social Democrats.
But there are people in your own party, elected members of your own party, who would be able to spend a very long period of time in here with me telling me what the differences are between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. You're saying really there aren't any.
No, I'm not saying there's no differences. I'm saying that we've shown that we're able to be mature and kind of close those gaps and work together to put together quite a successful government over the last 4 years. Of course, there are differences. Like we are a party of education, more so, I would say, than Fine Gael. We're a party of housing, 50,000 houses in the last 12 months. So there are differences that we will be campaigning on, but I think we've shown a maturity that I think you need in politics to show that we can
govern
together.
Should there be a formal pact then, transfer pact between the two parties at the very least going into the next general election?
I doubt it. I think a lot of transfer pacts happen naturally. I mean, you saw the vote left, transfer left happen quite successfully for the left parties. I don't know. Listen, I'm sure discussions will be had in terms of the approach for the next general election. But what I do know is that Fianna Fáil will be running on their own campaign and their own manifesto, and there will be differences in terms of what Fine Gael are offering.
But quietly saying to Fine Gael supporters that you should transfer from one to
quietly,
the other, Aisling.
Quietly just, saying for the last 4 years, because they went into coalition together and that was the ultimate signal. And I think we've seen this kind of subliminal messaging to their voters that if you want to keep this coalition in the next time around, that you're not, we're not telling you to vote for the other Civil War party, but like you could give them a preference. And this kind of a thing. And I even heard on the doors it was being said, Sean Kelly, the MEP down in Ireland South, was saying to people to give a second preference to Fianna Fáil. So you can see there that was very blatant, like open.
Surely
a preference down the line. But previously, I mean, that wouldn't have even come out of the mouth of a Fianna Gael campaigner. But at the same time, I think it's very interesting when you were asking there earlier, Claire, about there potentially not being Fianna Fáil or Fianna Gael in the next coalition, and maybe there could be some sort of coalition of the left. And I think it was a very touchy subject there when it was touched upon, because this messaging has been going out for the last 2 years in a more concerted effort to say to people that that this coalition, that you need to kind of vote for both of them to get them back in, this idea of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. I mean, you didn't mention the Green Party and they're in government with you. So they can feel quite abandoned. And I think also parties of the left or the smaller parties are also very conscious of the fact that when you go into a coalition and you are the smaller party, you can often come out quite bruised. And maybe they want to change that outcome and not have the bigger parties to bully them into a coalition potentially and then come out with the bad outcome for the party after 4 years, which is what we're seeing with the Greens. It's what we saw with Labour. Maybe they're trying to reverse their fortunes by not letting the old boys in and only having the new fresh kids on the block having a coalition the next time.
Christopher, have you abandoned the Greens now?
No, I don't accept that. Look, and I appreciate
you didn't
that there
mention
was,
them when you're talking about returning the
no,
coalition.
No, we were talking about the two major parties. I made a prediction that I could absolutely be wrong about, and it may be a left coalition that leads the next government. I'm just trying to kind of give my perception of how I feel things would go, and I imagine that the two biggest parties in local government, there's a good chance they'll be returned as the two biggest party in government. Absolutely. In relation to the Greens, we have not abandoned the Greens. I realise there was some commentary leading up to elections by some within the party trying to kind of distance themselves, but I think there's been an excellent collaboration and relationship between all three parties.
I think a very interesting point, Claire, is that in Dublin City, in Fingal and a number of other councils around the country, that Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael and the Greens can't even make a majority. They need to bring in the Labour Party as well. And that is an indication of the shifting in...
In Cork, Fianna Fáil are pretty much going on their own.
Voting patterns among the public. And we saw that
in Cork,
the results of the local elections.
In Cork, there'll be Fianna Fáil and Independence. Fine Gael haven't gone into a pact with us there, which is interesting.
Listen, let's move on and have a word about Aer Lingus now, because a lot of people are really worried about this coming into holiday season. And we had Páirc Ócáidí on here, founder of Air Aran, yesterday, and he was talking about it from the other perspective, saying that this will do reputational damage for us internationally, because a lot of American tourists coming here will be relying on Aer Lingus, Harry, to get here. I mean, do you see anything in the ether over the last, say, 48 hours, 72 hours even, that would lead you to believe that this thing would be sorted out?
No, not in the immediate term. And Páirc Ócáidí, when he was talking yesterday, was making the point that it's going to have very deep repercussions, not only for passengers who are stranded, but also for our tourist industry here, especially with the lucrative transatlantic flights. Simon Harris made some outspoken comments yesterday, but in reality, politicians can't get onto the pitch in relation to this. I think since the era of Bertie Ahern, industrial relation mechanisms have been very much in charge of sorting out the problems. It's not something for politicians to go in and intervene. So you have the Labour Court and the WRC, and they choose the time when they intervene. And they usually do not like to intervene too early, because if it comes too early, with no prospect of a settlement, there's always kind of talking going on behind the scenes. But I mean, it does come down to a question of timing. And I think at some stage, if the dispute, if it escalates and if there's no prospect of reconciliation, I think we are going to see an intervention, probably from the WRC rather than the Labour Court, because the Labour Court has been rejected by both sides.
So but you're saying the Taoiseach can't do anything, the Minister can't do anything, they can call for talks to happen, but really
it's a polite ask.
I mean,
there is an industrial relations mechanism in place in the state, and it's been there for the last 30 years. And we haven't seen political intervention in 30 years. And political intervention, you know, imposing itself upon a very well-established system is not going to be very helpful, in my view. Mm-hmm.
Do you accept that, Christopher, that really there's nothing that your own leader, the Taoiseach, there's nothing that Taoiseach can do, there's nothing the Minister for Transport can do? It has to be sorted out in other ways.
Yeah, it's interesting that Harry mentioned Bertie there. Actually, just as I was on the way over here, Hotelier also mentioned Bertie and would have said, back in the day, the leader of the union and the leader of Aer Lingus would have been pulled into separate rooms and some figure would have been agreed, and that would have been the way it would have worked. It doesn't happen like that anymore. It doesn't happen like that anymore for good reason. I do think the only way it can be resolved is through the Labour Court or through the WRC. It needs to happen sooner rather than later. I was talking to a whale-watching company in West Cork who were there with Fault Ireland. They're already reporting lower figures in terms of visitors compared to last year. So government really need to look at a strategy in terms of how we attract more people in. But this is going to have a further impact. And they're worried. The hoteliers are worried. People involved in hospitality are worried. Whale watching companies, those who provide adventure tourism, they're concerned. So it really needs to happen soon. But I'm worried about
you're saying they told you they're already experiencing a drop in bookings before any of this reared its head.
Yeah, so they're.
I wonder why that. Did they say why they think that is?
Unsure as to why that is. But the figures that Fault Ireland are assessing at the moment so far are saying that there has been a drop in visitor numbers, and this is right across the western seaboard from West Cork, Kerry, up to Clare and Galway. So that's concerning. The cost of doing business is obviously is difficult as it is, so further impact like this in terms of how this will impact consumer confidence is going to be concerning as well. And obviously, look, the people that we're forgetting about here is those who are going to be impacted by loss of flights.
Owen Corey was saying earlier that there's lots of ways to cut this, because when you look at it at face value, Roisin, you see the offer of 9.25%, the demand for nearly 24%, and it seems so far apart that the gap might never be bridged. But there will be a way forward found. It's just a question of getting them into a room to find it.
Absolutely. And I mean, this dispute will be resolved sooner rather than later. And for the sake of Irish holidaymakers and people coming here in the tourist industry and for business, it's really important that both sides to this, you know, realise the importance of it and start negotiations. They have to start talks. And, you know, they should be encouraged to do that by government, by the political system generally. But there is machinery there to resolve these issues. And, you know, while the gap is very wide, and we also know, of course, that Aer Lingus had very healthy profits this year, there is a middle point there, and that has to be reached. And it's only going to be reached if they actually get around
the
table.
And the sooner the better.
And this kind of, you know, diplomacy, megaphone diplomacy that we're hearing on the airwaves is completely unhelpful. I would say, Claire, there is one other issue, though, about that. It would seem that Aer Lingus is undercrewing its flights because of this issue of pilots being contacted, rung up on their day off.
They're not under-accruing their flights because they can't do that from a safety perspective. They might be using overtime to fill the rosters.
I have to leave it there.
I have to take a quick break. But my thanks to Christopher O'Sullivan, Roisin Shortall, Harry McGee and Ashley Maloney. Back after this.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.